This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. On this Saturday, getting into the weekend, the first home weekend for the Seahawks as they get back to take on the Dallas Cowboys tomorrow. Big football game for the Huskies at home. They've got to play Arizona State. And of course, we had a big game last night. Pretty crazy game with Washington State playing USC. So let's get started with some headlines. As far as that game yesterday, last night, Washington State missed a field goal with 1:14 left. It was blocked, and so that would have tied it. So they end up losing 39-36. I thought the intriguing thing was the attendance. What's happened down to USC? Only about 52,000 attending the game. Nevertheless, close game, tough loss, and now that's 3-1 for Washington State. Tonight, the Huskies take on Arizona State in a game that they're heavily favored to win, but they have had problems. Definitely going up against a team like Arizona State. So big, crucial Pac-12 game that they definitely need to win, but still with a good chance to win. As far as the Seahawks, a bad injury report yesterday. Ethan Posick's going to miss the game with an ankle injury. K.J. Wright's been officially scratched because of his knee. And then, of course, there's some questions right now about Earl Thomas. Earl was not practicing all week, and he's healthy. And so there's even when asked about it, Pete Carroll was saying, is he going to be able to play? And really didn't have an answer for it. I don't know if he said there's a personal thing going on. I guess players talking to anonymous sources, and that says he should be back out there playing, but then don't know for sure. He is healthy, and he's played two games, but this is the Dallas Cowboy team that he wanted to go to in a trade, so stay tuned. Nobody knows the answer to that. What a wacky start to this season. As far as the Mariners, they end up losing 8-3 last night in a rain-shortened game. Ramirez having a tough time giving up a lot of runs early, and so he's now 2-4. Mariners are 84-69. Oakland wins, and so virtually this team is within a day or two of being eliminated from the wild card race. So that's, I think, right on the agenda right now. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How are we doing this Saturday morning, my friend?
Doing well. How are you?
Oh, can't complain. Everything is great. Great. First things first, Mr. Clayton.
Yeah.
You got to give kudos to the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, they got
it. They won them a game. They got them one.
Mm-hmm. and in typical Cleveland way, because you figure, okay, here's Sam Darnold out there, 3 games in 11 days, and so you figure he's not going to do well, and he didn't. And so that put them at a point where all they had to do was try to win a low-scoring game. And remember, their defense isn't that bad, and so they're going up against Greg Williams. So it's like, all right. And so what happens? I mean, Tyrod Taylor ends up laying an egg in that first half and was terrible. Then he gets a concussion. Blake comes on the field, and Baker Mayfield comes on the field, and because there's no scouting report on him, they didn't really prepare for him. He was able to move things up and down, and they were able to get the win. And now it's a tough decision. What do you do? Do you start Baker Mayfield on Monday, make the announcement then, or what do you do? So all that uncertainty, all that craziness, but at least they're 1-1-1.
And that's a good thing. The thing it is I think they're going to have to end up starting Baker Mayfield for the excitement that he brought to those fans in that stadium and what he did. And you're right. There was no scouting report on him. The defense didn't have a gauge on how he would play and how to deal with him. But, from here on out, they're going to have to stick with him. I think they're going to have to just go with him and just see what happens,
I'm debate that because, again, I think you're better served. Now, again, the decisions could be made by the doctors. Because that's a third concussion for Taylor in about a year.
Yeah.
And so they very well may just say he's not ready to go. And, of course, that could be the excuse to say, all right, we're going to make this change at this stage. But what you worry about, and I think you see it, it's like, okay, so now you put the rookie out there. And, again, we just watched it with Sam Darnold. I mean, Darnold came out and won his first game. He's not been close in the last two because, you figure him out. And if you rush a quarterback, I think you cause yourself problems.
Yes. You definitely do. One of the old cliches is, if you look back like at Aaron Rodgers and a couple of those guys that sat back behind veterans and learned the game of football, they actually prospered much better. Now it remains to be seen. Would I rush him out there? No, I wouldn't. But by the popular demand over there with a team that's just starve, crave, hungry to do something, they're going to want him out there. You know, is it right? Maybe not, but you know that's going to happen with the Browns.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen. They're desperate right now, Mr. Clayton. And to get their first win, they're going to want another. And they got Oakland coming up in what? In about 10 days, a week?
Right,
a week
right.
From now. Yeah. They got the Oakland Raiders coming up with John Gruden saying that it's hard to find a pass rusher.
Isn't that ridiculous? He gave up one of the best in the game.
When you heard that, you got to tell me, what did you think when you heard that?
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised because I'm still stunned that he would make the move and get rid of Khalil Mack. Because, again, you know how good the guy is, and it's like, what are you thinking? And obviously he wasn't thinking.
I know. And, you know, if people think, okay, you know, first-round picks, it doesn't necessarily equate that these first-round picks are going to pan out or come to the caliber that Khalil Mack is
right.
As a player.
Agreed.
I mean, you just don't take those chances. When you got something guaranteed in the wheelhouse, I think you should ride that until it phases off.
Well, particularly when one of your weaknesses is defense. I mean, that's one of their problems. I mean, and of course, now for the third straight week, he says, well, yeah, we got to get better on our pass rush. Maybe we need to blitz more. Well, what? Maybe you needed to keep Khalil Mack. He's your best player. I mean, again, I'm a big fan of John Gruden. I like John Gruden, the coach, a lot. I mean, he's you know how successful he is. But John Gruden, the general manager, isn't cutting it.
No, not at all. I think he's still got some of the old ways in him that if you don't like it the way that I do it, I'm going to get you out of here and I can replace you.
Mm-hmm.
That is something, you know, Randy Mueller, when he was with the Saints, remember, he used to be with the Seahawks. Randy Mueller always said one time, he said on the radio, he said, if you go get rid of talent, you better replace talent with talent.
Right.
Because he said, people are going to start recognizing that guy that you got rid of, the guy that you replaced him with, is not formidable.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's going to be a detriment on you. So, I mean, I don't know what he was thinking. I thought maybe he had some surprise that Bruce Smith or somebody was going to just come out of retirement and just start blowing up. It's just not good. It's not good. And to say that at a press conference, it makes you look like an idiot.
Yeah, I know. And we know John Gruden's not an idiot, but again, he makes a mistake.
But it just was terrible. Wait, now, Mr. Clayton. New Orleans is going. We're going to Atlanta for Sunday. How do you look at this?
You have to figure they're starting to get a little bit better on defense. I still think New Orleans is the better team. But I've been to so many of those games, New Orleans and Atlanta, that, ultimately it always comes down to the end of the game. It's always going to be a 3-point game. It could go to overtime, all those things. But that's just the nature of that series. And I think that makes it good. But I guess this is going to be the proving ground to see which is the better team. I still think New Orleans is slightly the better team, particularly with the injuries. I mean, you've seen since the first week of the season, the Falcons have lost three starters. Andy Leveitcher on the offensive line, Colonel Neal, the safety. And then they've also lost Deion Jones, their inside linebacker. And so you take away those three guys, and they're not as good.
Yeah, that's true. You know, and Julio Jones, which I didn't blame him for not getting that money, he still doesn't practice as much because of his foot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is that something that's gonna continue to bug him throughout the season?
Yes.
His foot?
Yeah. In fact, I don't know if you heard him on one quote that he was talking about. I mean, he's taken almost the Calvin Johnson approach, that he's thinking more short term than anything else, thinking that because of that foot injury and because of injuries in general, he may not have a long career.
No, well, that's why I didn't blame him to go out and get that money, because he knows that probably at the end of his contract is over,
mm-hmm.
You know, as far as that's concerned, looking at his foot like that. Now, what do you got to tell me? What do you think about Josh Gordon going to New England?
Why not? I mean, it's just a gamble that, may pay off, may not pay off. I can't guarantee what he's going to be able to do because, I mean, you know, every time you think that he's going to be fine, he's not. And so you don't know if he's going to have problems with the drugs. You don't know. I mean, how do you get a hamstring injury in a photo shoot?
And he practiced that Friday.
Mm-hmm.
That was the thing about it. He practiced that Friday, and that Saturday when he was late, he came in and said that his hamstrings were bugging him.
Right.
You know, I don't know, Mr. Clayton. I don't know. I think it's such a guy with such a vast amount of talent that was wasted. It's just unbelievable.
Really is. I agree with that. I mean, it's just crazy to think, you know, how bad that situation has been, because he is a great talent, but you never know that because of the fact he's always got something going on.
I know. If one place can change that around, it would possibly be the New England Patriots.
I don't know if that's the case.
And Bill Belichick.
Yeah,
get something going.
It could, but I can't guarantee it. I hope it's a fact, but hey, can't guarantee that.
No, you can't guarantee it at all. Right quick in Arizona, Mr. Clayton, Sam Bradford is going to stay the starting quarterback, or you go with Drew Rosen?
I think you wait a couple weeks. Listen, I'll stand by this. With quarterbacks that are coming out of college, it is better to sit the quarterback than rush him in. Simple as that. Now, if he comes out of a pro set offense, fine. You can push him in. But, I mean, you look at the success rate of what Andy Reid was able to do with Patrick Mahomes, let him sit for 16 weeks, put him in at week 17, and look how good Mahomes is right now. Would you rather have that, particularly when you have a quarterback that can get you by? I think the longer you can keep the guy on the bench, the better it is with the current model of quarterbacks. Because when you come out of the spread offense, you can maybe have a good first game. But that second game, the third game, you may start drifting down, and then you start drifting down, you get the quarterback moving in a bad direction.
That is true. And, the one thing you just were talking about that with the quarterback as far as that's concerned, I think it's just the peer pressure on the team to put this guy out there because he was a first-round pick. From the fans, the media, what have you. I think it's just peer pressure on him. If you stay tried and true to your decision to sit this guy and not put him out there, I think you do him a great service of next year letting him take the reins of that football team. Because, I've heard quarterbacks talk about that, how great that was for them to learn and be able to see the game, and get those mental reps on the sideline.
Agreed.
Before they go out there in the actual action of the football game. And I've been having that ability to, because you can ruin a lot, like I know, a lot of quarterbacks got ruined by doing that to them, by putting them out there like that.
Right.
I agree with you 100%. Is Dallas's defense as good as it is?
Hard to tell. I mean, I think that, the Giants offense is so bad that, with their offensive line, Eric Flowers included, that, I think it's hard to judge. I guess this is going to be a good test and find out how good it really is. Again, I know the offense right now, Seattle's not very good, but, I still think it's debatable. I mean, I don't know if there still is enough, pressure that they put on the quarterback. I still think that's debatable. The secondary is very young. So we'll see. I mean, it's an improved defense. There's no question. Chris Richard, I think, has really helped out that defense, particularly in the secondary. But I still think it's to be judged.
Yeah, he took over the play corner for Rod Marinelli, right?
Yeah, Rod allowed that to happen. Yes.
Yeah. The things that I look at, you got Lawrence on there. You got Charlton on the defensive line. They're pretty formidable pass rushers. Like I said, the reason I asked you that, because they played the Giants and they played Carolina. Now, Carolina beat them. It was a low-scoring game, but the Giants, I thought I would see more from the Giants as far as on the offensive line. I thought getting the left tackle from the Giants, from the New England Patriots soldier to come on that line would do good. But Eric Flowers, like you said, he's not a guy to be trusted.
Right.
But I really thought more of the Giants than that. So that's why I was asking, from just those two games looking at them, do you trust the Cowboys' offense? Mr. Clayton.
Not right now, no. They haven't seen enough of it to trust it yet.
I don't like their receivers. I don't think their receivers are that good. I think their tight ends are kind of suspect, too, also. Now, the running game is good.
Right.
Ezekiel Elliott and the young quarterback, they're going to do what they have to do to get out there and get it done. How do you see that turning out Sunday?
Hard to tell. I mean,
Yeah.
Hey, but JB, I've got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, next Sunday.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Good, John. How are you this morning?
Doing great.
Great. Well, a few shout-outs, John. First of all, the Cleveland Browns. John,
there you go.
Cleveland Browns. I mean, it was great to see that.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? It made for good entertainment on Thursday night, John. I understand the ratings were, pretty darn
about an 8-4, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, come on. It's the New York market that's watching it, too. Let's face it, right, with that data.
Well, and I think there is, I think, a curiosity factor right now with the with the Browns.
Sure. Given the Hard Knocks situation,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, seeing if they can win because they haven't won in a while, and they came close last week kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another shout-out, John, to Julius Peppers for donating $100,000 of his own money for Hurricane Florence efforts. I think that's fantastic, John.
No, that really is. A lot of good charitable things, I mean, going on right now, you know, with Michael Jordan and a lot of players, and I think that's a great thing, no question about
Indeed.
It.
Indeed. And then, of course, to Derek Carr throwing – what, for how many, 288 yards, 22
mm-hmm.
for 25 in passing? I mean, I think that basically basically tells people that he's on track and he's doing well, even though it was in a losing effort in Denver.
Yeah, but that's the thing. I mean, it's like to generate only like the low number of touchdowns he did. I thought that was a little disappointing.
Yes, indeed. Well, they are mixing it up by running it quite a bit, which is
right.
Nice to see. And, you know, Marshawn, and, you know, looked really good. But one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, John, is can we talk about the Kansas City Chiefs?
Sure.
And with particular emphasis on Pat Mahomes. I mean, for heaven's sake, yeah, he got to sit for a whole year, and he got to play in the 17th to 16th game of last year, and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And, look, there's virtually no film on the guy in a professional setting. He played these past two games. Who did he play? He played the Los Angeles Chargers without Joey Bosa and a deficient defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then who they play the following week? They played the Steelers, and we know the Steelers have problems. And the Steelers came close.
Right.
They have Ben Roethlisberger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's be real here, folks. I mean, yeah, the guy's got a cannon. The guy can throw the ball. No question. He's got a great pedigree.
Agreed.
But for heaven's sakes. Two games is not enough data. Can we at least get through the first quarter of the season before we start, you know, anointing him as a new saint?
No, I can agree with that. But I think the one thing you have to acknowledge is that they've done a great job with this.
Oh, no question. And look, Andy Reid, he's in the best pants he could possibly be in with Andy Reid. You and I have concurred on that in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Reid is going to be great for this kid. I mean, and it's going to be great for the Kansas City Chiefs, and it's going to be great for that franchise. So, no question about it. Now, Dorsey was involved in that draft, wasn't he?
What was that again?
Was John Dorsey involved with that draft?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought so, yeah. And so, now, what do you think about the Baker Mayfield situation and Hugh Jackson? I'm like you. I tend to be a bit of a traditionalist. I think Tyrod Taylor should be given the opportunity to play.
I agree.
He's healthy. He got banged up pretty bad. He had to come out of the game. But here again, people are overreacting to, you know, look, let Baker Mayfield sit for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be great, John. I have no question in my mind.
I agree with that. But if you rush it, it slows things down. And then I still go back to, like, the Joey Harrington experiment, you know, because
yes.
What ends up happening, it wasn't totally Joey's fault, is that they kept losing and losing and losing. And then what goes on next is, you know, you keep losing, and then all of a sudden they attach the losing to the quarterback. And not just, I'm talking about the people who are critics, I'm talking about the players.
Yeah, and Harrington was a heck of a player.
Right.
I mean, and you can find similarities throughout the you and JB were alluding to it earlier. I mean, let's talk about David Carr.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he got beat up really bad, John, when he was with the Texans. He was really never the same player.
Right.
And, you know, that's a problem. That's a problem, John. Can we talk about Russell Wilson?
He's
a bit skittish, John. He really does. He seems awfully tentative. And is it attributed to the offensive coordinator? I mean, I don't know.
I think it's more attributed to the offensive line, the blocking. I think you have to give some responsibility to the offensive coordinator. You have to give some of it to Russell himself.
Yes. He seems indecisive. He holds on to the ball for too long, John, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just from me casually looking at the games whenever I can and whatnot. But it just seems like he – And, you know, look, he's so competitive, John.
Right.
He wants to win every possession, and he wants to take advantage of every possession. And if the ball's in his hands, he figures, well, hey, I can take charge. But, you know, having that mindset is great, but it has to be modulated with a little bit of being rational and getting the ball out of your hands and throwing the ball out of bounds so that you can play another play. It just doesn't make any sense to keep holding on to the ball for as long as he has.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
I mean, again, I think that they have identified the problem, and now they've got to fix it, without question.
Yeah. And then there's a mystery about what's going on with the running game, John. I mean, I thought they were supposed to be establishing the running game.
They're supposed to, but they haven't. They've got to. There's no second thoughts on this. They've got to fix that.
Yeah. Another question for you, John. So I was reading about the Julius Peppers thing that we talked about earlier. I mean, I don't know this. You would know this as a media person. But do the media, do they have to make a request to the NFL or to franchises to talk to a certain player? For instance, with Julius Peppers, he was virtually silent until he came out and talked about his donation. Mm-hmm. Do media representatives have the opportunity to do that?
You file a complaint. There's a local chapter president of the Pro Football Writers now. We started that this year. And so what you do next is you come back and you, give a chance to them to, talk to the, and if he doesn't do it, then he gets a $10,000 fine. I give you like Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham refused to talk. And so they put in and when he didn't do it, then they fined him $10,000.
I see. Because, I'm always looking at things from a silver and black perspective, and the Raiders have always been very close-lipped about who they allow people to talk to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering how that work with the Raiders as opposed to other franchises.
It works the same with every team.
Okay.
You're supposed to talk, and if you don't talk, then you pay a price.
So then Marshawn was fine each time he didn't talk to the press when he was with the Seahawks.
If the media doesn't push it, that's why it's up to the media to push that and try to make sure.
You have to make the request first.
Absolutely, 100%. Thanks for the call.
Okay, John, bye-bye.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jimmy in Seattle. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey, John, how you doing this week?
Doing well. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. Hey, John, real quick, just a couple injury updates, if you know any information. What's the status on Marquise Goodwin this week?
Questionable game-time decision. I think there's a better than 50% chance that he might play, but I can't guarantee it.
Hey, John, and then what about Marvin Jones? I see he just popped up on the injury report for the Lions yesterday. Their game's obviously the late game on Sunday night.
Right.
What do you think about Marvin Jones?
Probably should be able to go. I think that I'm not too worried about that one.
And then last one, John, obviously the Eagles have already ruled out Darren Sproles and Jay Ajayi.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like Corey Clement got put on the on the injury report this morning as well. So who do you think is going to be the starting running back for the Eagles this week?
Sure. Probably going to be Clement because he's not even 100%. So they're going to have to go by committee. And so they're kind of running through the raindrops because I was surprised that Jay Ajayi did miss the game and now is going to miss the game. No surprise on Sproles, but now they really rely on him and they're getting, Carson Wentz back. That's good. But they may not have enough running to try to get through in this game.
Hey, John, and let's talk about the next year's draft a little bit because obviously, just in my opinion, I think the Seahawks are going to be picking in the top five. Now, there's a couple players out there that would look really good in Seahawks uniforms. One of them is Greedy Williams, the corner from LSU, supposedly the next Patrick Peterson. But also, John, now with the domino injury from Bosa, do you think Bosa would slide or do you think he still goes one or two?
I think he goes one or two. Because I don't think this is a totally serious injury, but still it's one that, I think that he can bounce back from. And you know that he is that good as a pass rusher. And, his brother is that good, even though he's not healthy. But, no, I think that in the end he'll be out there doing things.
Hey, John, and last thing. So, obviously, if the Seahawks do get a top five pick next year, they're gonna have a real tough decision on their hands, John. I haven't studied the quarterbacks as closely
It's a bad quarterback draft. Not even
so you're not a fan of the Locke kid from Missouri or Herbert from Oregon.
No.
You're not a fan of those guys?
Nope. I think, I don't know. Somebody may go in the first round, but I don't know if it's a first round quarterback next year. I question it.
Okay. And John, one last thing. I'll take your comments off there. What about Vita Vea? Is he going to play this week? Thanks,
looks
John.
Like it. Yeah. He finally got back in the practice field in the last week. And I know he's questionable, but I think there's a better than not chance that he's going to be able to play. Hey, Jimmy, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Michael Sean Duker coming up next.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Lots to talk about with Michael Sean Duker of The Athletic, and I tell you what, can this season be any crazier, Michael? It's like, just when you think things are starting to settle down, which they haven't, two offensive linemen likely to miss the game. We already know that Ethan Posick's out, and still there's a better chance than not than Justin Britt, who's questionable. He may not be able to play. And then you throw in the other aspect of what's going on with Earl Thomas. Have you seen anything like this?
Well, it's kind of funny you mentioned that. If you think of some of the past seasons, it has been, pretty crazy. When when Sherman was questioned his authority, and then you had, I think, what was it, Marshawn and someone else were drag racing or not drag racing outside the facility.
Mm-hmm.
That time Marshawn didn't get on the bus to a playoff game. Didn't they fight before the Super Bowl? I mean, yeah, it's been pretty crazy around here. But as far as this season, it's like, yeah, what is going on?
What's your read on what's happening right now with Earl Thomas? I mean, it seems like, you know, different people talking to different sources, he'll be there playing, but something's up. I don't know if it's the fact that he's playing Dallas, he's feeling disrespected because there's no contract extension. All I know is that he's played good football. The first two games, he's done a good job. I mean, he's now shown his value.
And I think we can't forget, right? Earl always had one goal, get paid. You know what hasn't happened for Earl yet? He hasn't gotten paid.
Right.
And so anytime he has not gotten paid and it seems like there's something up, I have to assume that that's the source of it, unless it's an injury or a family matter or something like actually like, you know, troubling in his life. But for the most part, if Earl seems disgruntled at all, it's going to go back to one thing for me. You know, it's just, hey, where's the check? Where's the money? You know, I'm playing well. I want to get paid. You know, I don't know the details of it, but that has to be the automatic assumption that Earl is in charge of the situation because he likes to take charge of the situation. We just saw that with the holdout, and we know what he wants. Right? It's not a mystery. He's been letting us know for a year. Pay me. That's been his message, right? It should be tattooed on his forehead at this point. And so I have to assume that it has to do with the fact that he's been playing well, like you mentioned, and still no deal.
So do you get the feeling that he's not practicing because he's upset about contract? And if so, where would that put you as far as the feeling about what the team should do?
Well, what the team should do, I've always thought, is pay him, just because there's just so much of a difference between when he's on the field and when he is not on the field. I know Pete Carroll kind of disputed that idea, I think, a week ago, but I am very confident in saying that he is wrong about that, and the tape will show that he is wrong. There is a very big difference in the Seahawks defense when Earl is on the field versus when he is not. As far as why he didn't practice, it's weird. He actually didn't practice Wednesday, which is, I think, on par with what he did the week prior, was to not practice Wednesday. Then he practiced Thursday, mm-hmm. which I believe was a full pad day. And if
right.
you're ever going to want to, you know, give a middle finger to the organization about what you're going to do, it would be to not practice in the day with full pads, right? Because that's when you really could probably get hurt.
Right.
I think that is when Michael Kendricks got hurt. So that makes Friday even weirder, right? Because we have really nothing else to go on. If he didn't practice Thursday and Wednesday, be like, oh, yeah, this is just a symbolic Earl Thomas middle finger.
Mm-hmm.
But the Thursday practice throws things off. It, like, pokes a hole in our little conspiracy blimp. It's frustrating.
Yeah, it really is. And it's just so strange, and it's just like one thing after another. What's your read on what happened with Chris Carson and what happened with the running game?
In big picture with the running game, it seems like there is a huge miscommunication and just a slight, how do I want to put this, tug of war with the – it's almost like Pete Carroll and John Schneider are like playing a video game together, but there's only one controller.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so it's like sometimes Schottenheimer has it, and then Pete's like, here, let me see, let's call a pass play, and then he doesn't give it back. He's just like, you know, let's call another pass play, and another one, and Schottenheimer's like, dude, I came in with a whole plan, what you doing? And that's why you see like this disconnect with both guys saying they need to do better, both guys saying they should run the ball more, but Pete admitting that he got impatient and wanted to throw. So I think as those two fill each other out and, you know, get to the point where it's like, okay, Pete, you're stepping on his toes a little bit, but you are in charge. But at the same time, Schottenheimer is not going to be like, yeah, Pete, go away. But he did mention that he's been getting feedback from outside, you know, in terms of the play calling. So big picture, I think that's going on with the run game in mm-hmm. general. And I also think that's a huge problem.
Right? It was supposed to be one voice.
You guys don't know how to deal with each other?
Yeah. Well, the thought was it was supposed to be one voice, and the one voice was supposed to be Brian Schottenheimer, but all of a sudden you hear Pete.
Right, and there's that part of it, right? 2 weeks in, they're not a deal with each other, and that's clearly, I mean, what are you guys working on? Kidding? This is exactly what the preseason is for,
mm-hmm.
to figure that part out. Two, Pete Carroll said something very interesting yesterday, or the other day, with, he said,
you know, I got impatient. That's why I went away from the run game and we started throwing more because I wanted to put more points on the board. I thought we should have more points than we should have. Now, over the last few months, I've been reading a lot about, you know, advanced numbers and things like that. And what we know just in football right now, and it's probably been the case for a while, to score more points, if you would like to do it efficiently, it actually, the best way is to throw the ball. So it seems like Pete knows that, but wants to go against that because of some, like, commitment to an archaic version of football where you have to pound it down people's throats, set up play action and all that, when really we know if you want to get points, throw it. So the fact that he knows that, but almost, like, philosophically is against it, is also very concerning because mm-hmm. it's not just like the O-line, the running back. It's like you're going in with a flawed plan. I think that's Seattle's biggest problem offensively is that they have no identity because the plan's all messed up.
Yeah. Or they're trying to figure out what the plan is and trying to, you know, get some identity. That to me, is just real baffling. So there's a lot to fix up right now. What do you think happens tomorrow?
Oh, boy. It just gets tougher and tougher each day to predict with this team. I think if Earl plays, and it's my understanding that he will, then I think the defense will continue to be fine. So I'm not too worried about that part of it. I think if the wise thing for Ken Norton Jr. to do, and he's been, you know, doing the wise thing at least through 2 weeks defensively, would be to try to make Dak Prescott beat them by throwing the ball often. Right, that would be the plan. And if that is the plan and they execute that in the way I think they can, especially with Bobby Wagner back, then the Cowboys would be a little bit of trouble because I'm not sure how capable Dak Prescott is of doing that to any team, to be honest, which mm-hmm. then is why we've seen him running a little bit more. Offensively, I would have to assume that they're better at home, but even then they had some stiff-ass stinkers at home in the past. I think the Seahawks win, but probably in something ugly and close, kind of like last year's Washington Redskins game. I think that was like 17-14, mm-hmm, just ugly. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I agree 100%. It's like even if they win, it's not going to be pretty, but of course you take it because there's just so many new elements to this team. You know, first game they start off, six players that are rookies or first-year guys getting 25 snaps or more, and three others that have maybe, what, a total of eight practices, you know, going out there. I'm talking eight practices total for the offseason and training camp, and they're out there playing. Then last week, a whole new linebacking core, you know, a change with Akeem King in the secondary, and then all the confusion at the running back position, and now this week the problem's on the offensive line.
Yeah, I think the offensive line almost, I don't know if they'll be better served with JR on the left side, but like we know that JR is a starting caliber offensive lineman. We don't know if he necessarily is on the left side of the line, but in general we know that he is. Right? So if you got JR on the left, we know Fluker is also a starting caliber offensive lineman on the right. This actually could be, if Justin plays, what's that? That's Dwayne, JR, Justin, DJ, and Jermaine. That's probably just as good as a lineup they had out there in week one or week two. So with the O-line, not too concerned. But when you think about what this defense has been able to do, the biggest problem is, like you mentioned, the youngsters, right? Like you can probably put a lot of Emmanuel Sanders touchdown on Trey Flowers, a rookie. Mm-hmm. You can put Phillip Lindsay's touchdown in week one on Shaquem, a rookie. You can put the Trey Burton touchdown probably on Kalitro, another new guy, and then you could put the Bears' second touchdown on Akeem King, another new guy, right? It's just so much new, and that's kind of the issue here. But as these guys get more familiar, you have to, and I still think the defense is playing well as a whole.
Yeah.
You have to think as they get more familiar, then it'll actually be really good. The defensive side of the ball, I'm not too concerned with. I don't even think it was bad last year with Chris Richard. It's the offense, and it's not just because it doesn't seem like anyone's playing well. It seems like the philosophy is a problem and the execution's a problem. And if those things continue to be a problem, that just means you're a bad offense. It's like there's no way around that.
But you would think that there's enough elements there that they can get it fixed. I mean, you can understand the first two games when literally you have Doug Baldwin down. You have four basically of your five receivers are all new. And I include David Moore because he was more of a practice squad guy. So if you're Russell Wilson, you're still trying to figure out and get into sync with what they do. And right now they're not there. They're not in sync.
Yeah, that's the execution part of it that's a problem. And that theoretically will get better.
But I've been, I think last year they've been saying this too, also probably in the past going back, is that, you know, when they have offensive problems, it's like, oh, we just need to stay on schedule. What happened in the game? We got behind schedule, you know, negative plays. Like, man, if that just keeps happening, that's not the problem. That's who you are.
Right.
Right. Like, you need to accept that you're a team that's behind schedule. Right. You know, like I was, you know, the all last year, Tom Cable thought the run game would turn around, the offense turned around if they eliminated negative plays and stayed on schedule. Well, we saw how that worked. Right. And it's the same tune this year. And it's like, OK, well, eventually you're just a team that's off schedule. Now adjust to that. Right. The hope that if we stay on schedule, we'll fix everything is fine. I can get why you have to say that because you have to believe that that's going to be the case. But eventually, I don't know when. You have to realize, man, if you're just off schedule all the time, that's just who you are. Change the schedule now.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Adjust and adapt and acknowledge the flaws and that they are bigger than just being behind schedule, that they are being off schedule. If that makes it's a subtle difference, but it's huge in mentality and what you have to fix. I think Seattle might get to that point, win or lose on Sunday.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a critical game. What areas do you think has a chance to improve the most going in tomorrow?
It's easily Russell. You know, Russell had an okay game week one, and then you could really argue that he was just not good, you know, in week two, especially in the fourth quarter when he's supposed to be money. You know, that pick six is on him. The strip sack is on him. Both of those were in the fourth quarter, and the pick six was in a one-possession game, and I don't think the strip sack was at that point because of the pick six. So, I mean, that's where he earns his money. You know, is the fourth quarter, is being clutch, is those road wins, you know, those games on prime time. That's why Seattle has such a great prime time record, right? They've been mm-hmm. clutch. You know, and you can put, maybe if you don't put the first three quarters on what Russell was able to do, fourth quarter, he can't turn the ball over twice in a game they're trying to go win.
Right.
That's his bottom line, right? That, independent of anything else, his O-line, if you think they're terrible or think his receivers aren't getting open, whatever. There were guys open on the strip sack, and the pick six was bad. Simple as that. If you want to win a game in the fourth quarter, you cannot turn the ball over twice, and that goes to the highest paid guy who touches the ball every play. So I think he can easily turn it around because he's been there, done that. So he's the guy who would pick he'll fix what's going on. If he turns it around, they can win. But through two games, you can put a lot of what's going on. I mean, he took half the sacks himself in week one, and then two turnovers in the fourth quarter in week two. You can't have that with this team the way it's constructed. They need Russell to be Superman, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
he's, like, real close. He's, like, when Superman is Clark Kent and kind of pops open the shirt, the button, and the shirt, and you can see the costume. No, he's got to rip it all the way off and get out there and go save people, right, if they're going to make the playoffs.
No question, and that's going to be the challenge. So what do we have on The Athletic?
We just dropped our preview series. We're doing it every week. That's real fun. I always team up with our writer from the other team. That's real cool because they bring like a super different perspective, right? And it's they're like all strangers to me for the most part. But like I like to read their stuff just as much as like our subscribers would.
Mm-hmm.
I have a real big project coming out with one of the bigger name players on the team that should be. Next week, I'm actually really, really excited about that. I won't name drop who it is yet. I don't give too much of it away,
okay.
Obviously. But it's a real big project, real cool. Had fun doing it, and obviously we have our Seahawks Man to Man podcast. It's not good for the Seahawks if they lose, obviously. But the more they do, I don't know, man. People love listening to podcasts when we're talking about panicking.
Yeah, that's true.
They go 0-3. I'm sure our show that drops Monday will be fan. I mean, if they win, it'll be great.
Too. Yeah.
But, I mean, 0-3 definitely sells podcasts. I don't know. That should be our slogan. Maybe
yeah, but
write that
let's
down.
Put it this way.
Yeah,
0-3 eventually drops
Monday
ratings.
Morning.
Yeah. 0-3
yeah,
eventually
that's
drops
a Monday
ratings.
Monday morning, that should drop.
Yeah, there's gross right. Hey, Michael Sean, thank you so much. And we'll be reading The Athletic.
Thanks, y'all.
Michael Sean Duggar. So we will come back and take your phone calls, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN, The John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Suki. Hey, Suki, how are you?
Hey, Professor, how's it going?
Going good.
Hey, yes. I was just wondering, what do you believe that the outcome is going to be with the Seahawks versus the Cowboys? Do you believe that with DJ Fluker back, that the run game will be more more consistent this time around?
I think it has to be. Again, you worry about the injuries on the offensive line because if you're taking away possibly two starters, you know, that could cause some problems. But I have to think it's going to be a little bit better. I mean, listen, it's going to be a sloppy game. And that's not because of weather or anything else. But, you know, I think it's going to be similar to what you've seen in the first two games, is that somehow they'll muddle the way through and have a chance to win in the fourth quarter. What's happened in these last two games that they haven't been able to pull out those victories. And so I think that now they have a better chance of doing it. But again, you know, if they fail, that's because, again, if it's going to be that mistake by Russell Wilson, if it's going to be a key penalty, the lack of a running game, whatever it's going to be, you know, they've got to do something to be able to do it. I think they have the ability to do it, but right now there's some questions. But I think that they still can pull this game out.
Do you think as a team they can rush for 100 yards?
They got the talent to do it, but I don't know if they will. I mean, that's been, I mean, what, let's put it this way. It still comes down to the number of attempts. I mean, they've only had 38 attempts in two games. I mean, that's 38's a good one for one game, not just two games. So they've got to be able to do it. I just think that there's going to be more of an effort and more of a concentration to do it. I think that they've got to probably mix in some up-tempo type things to, you know, generate some more offense. I think that, you know, they've got to make some adjustments, but you know, I still think they can do it. But right now, it's up to them.
And one last question: if you could. If you can say, what's the main key if the Seahawks have pulled off the victory?
I think the main key is not make turnovers, win the turnover battle, which is not going to be easy because Dak Prescott does not turn the ball over. So they've got to win the turnover battle, and they've got to try to at least you know, minimize the amount of running that Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott can do. I mean, you can't have a 100-150-yard gap right now with the two running totals. And so they've got to run the ball. They've got to possess the ball. They've got to get more plays. You know, there's two things. There's two stats that kind of stick out. I mean, with so far with Dallas in two games, in the first two, and I don't think it's going to be a germane in this one, you know, the quarterback that ran the most and got the most carries and did the best running the ball won. So it was Cam Newton in the first game. It was Dak Prescott in the second game. You know, the other one is to, you know, make sure that, you know, who's better on third downs. Because if the Seahawks are better on the third downs, and both teams are not good on third downs, the better team on third down, you can combine that with some running stuff, and that should determine the winner.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Professor.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.